afternoon or good evening, depending on where you are in the world, and welcome to Information Week Live for the week of October 23rd, 2016. I'm your host, Kurt Franklin, Executive Editor for Technical Content at Information Week. I'm thrilled to have you here, and I'm also thrilled to have, someone who we don't get to have around the virtual conference table very often, but it's always a pleasure when we can have her. We've got Information Week's editorial director, Susan Nunziata. Susan, welcome to Information Week Live.
Thank you, Kurt. I'm delighted to be here. It's been way too long, and I'm happy to join you on the air today.
Well, you know, it's been interesting. We've had an interesting time at Information Week because things have changed at the site. We've really sort of made a difference in what we're covering and why we're covering it. We're taking a deeper look at things rather than going out and just trying to cover the news because, let's face it, in an era with Twitter and all of the other social media available to people in the industry, there's a lot of ways that people can get news. There's a lot fewer avenues out there for really good analytical content and stories about why things matter. But I've got to say, looking at the site for the last week or two, I've been really impressed with what we've been able to put up. How are we doing on this transition? Do you feel like we're still sort of in the process of moving things, or should people look for other new things in the days and weeks to come over at Information Week?
Well, Kurt, I think that, first of all, the team at Information Week has done a phenomenal job of pivoting from, many of us have a traditional background in news reporting, and the, just to do a little inside baseball, the opportunity to take a media brand like Information Week and undergo this sort of radical transformation of a topic, tone, and coverage scope has really been pretty extraordinary. And we've got a really dedicated team who has made it their priority to pivot in a way that our leadership has asked us to do in a strategic sense. So we haven't rolled out a bunch of new approaches, as you said. The change on focus is away from the quick hit news story and the opportunity to provide sort of a deeper look at what's behind the headlines, but more importantly, to tell the stories of the human beings that are visiting our site, that are part of our community. And I think that's where the excitement for me it personally comes in, is that we're getting to talk to the folks who are using technology and using technology in a transformative way in their organizations. And those are some compelling and exciting stories that we've had recently. I think you can look to see more of those from us. I know, in fact, you are also planning a great series of upcoming podcasts based on interviews that you've done at Gartner, and I think we expect to see more of that kind of storytelling and more of the user voice coming through as well. And we're also working on new content formats. We recognize how busy everyone is. We're looking for ways to use infographics and flash polls and some of those other tools that you see on other websites that we really haven't delved into that much on Information Week, but to provide content in ways that different people prefer to consume it. So those are some of the things that we're looking for. And I think most importantly, to put all of this in context, these changes are underway in an effort to align Information Week with our sister event, Interop. And I think one of the things that clearly indicates that is the change in the way that we're focusing on topics that have been determined by the Interop crew to be of priority to their attendees. So we're looking at things like, of course, IT leadership and career development, DevOps, cloud, data management, data analysis, basically all things you need to know about data for your IT organization and infrastructure. And so these are the topics that have been identified as core priorities for Interop. And I think as the year progresses, you'll see much more alignment between what we're covering and what folks are going to be talking about in Interop in Las Vegas in May of 2017.
You know, Susan, I personally am pretty excited about a lot of this. I know that it is a big change for Information Week, but I think that it really gets to sort of the heart of what the folks who come to Information Week need from a site right now. And I'm also very excited about this tie-in to the Interop event. People who have followed me on podcasts know that I've been part of podcasting and doing work around Interop for more than a decade. And so from that perspective, I think it's really neat to be able to bring the resources of these two really respected names in IT together. And I'm looking forward to seeing exactly what we can do. You know, there are some really creative people here on the staff at Information Week. And as you say, to get a little bit inside baseball in the staff meetings that we've been having, there have been some great ideas coming out about the new content formats, the new ways of reaching people, recognizing that most people aren't going to be sitting down at a desktop computer to consume information. They're looking at our stories on a mobile phone. They're listening to our podcast. They're wanting infographics that they can see and understand in very short order. So a lot of really neat opportunities for us to tell new stories in new ways. And I know that we appreciate having you riding herd over all of the cats that put together Information Week. So it's going to be an exciting ride ahead for the next few months.
And you are all very cool cats.
Well, you know, speaking of cool cats, you and I have each gotten a chance to go out and be amongst some of the cool cats of the industry in the last week or two. The reason that there was not an episode of Information Week Live last week is that a bunch of us were out at different places. I was at the Gartner Symposium down in Orlando, Florida, and you've been out checking out financial tech. Now, where were you catching up on the latest in fintech?
Well, I didn't have to travel too far. Well, depending on traffic. I just went down to Menlo Park, which is if you don't get lost like I do, about a two-hour journey from Berkeley, depending on traffic, or a lot shorter if the right time of day. Bank of America Merrill Lynch hosted a technology innovation summit down in Menlo Park. This was their eighth year in doing so. And what they do is bring together a bunch of Silicon Valley startups and work with them, meet them, get to know them, and think about ways that they can use some of this startup energy and mentality and creativity, as well as, of course, the products themselves, to better their own ability to serve their customers. And so it was a fascinating look for me at what is happening in financial services. I think, like many other industries, they are now at a crossroads where they're facing the realities of digital disruption. You know, a phrase that is bandied about so much, it's sort of lost its meaning, but it became very clear in hearing the presentations at this innovation summit, because the Bank of America executives were basically saying, we are no longer a financial services company. I mean, of course they still are, but they're a technology company. And technology is no longer, you know, a sort of side thing that keeps the business running, it is now core and recognized as absolutely essential to every single thing they are doing. And that is a radical shift for an industry that, you know, is old and dominated by a lot of legacy equipment and controlled by a lot of very strict regulations. They're looking at how to reach consumers across all those outlets that you've just described, and they're facing basically the same challenges that any media company or really any other retail business has already kind of looked at and faced. I think what's different for financial services is the regulatory environment, the security concerns. It has made them a bit more challenged in moving ahead to meet the demands of the consumer. But they're recognizing that their competitors are not other banks or other financial service organizations. Their competitors for consumer mindshare and for consumer behavior are things like Uber and Amazon. And we, as consumers of banking and financial services, expect to have an experience that is as simple and accommodating as what happens when we use Uber or when we go on Amazon. So that's a big, huge mind shift for an industry that's accustomed to thinking in a very different way. And so that was very enlightening for me, and we've seen it, you know, throughout the year. We saw it with Capital One as well, who was our Elite 100 number one for 2016. And we're seeing it with other organizations like the insurance field. I had an interesting conversation a week or so ago with IT executive at CSAA, which is the insurance arm of AAA. And they're facing the same kinds of challenges. So it's an interesting time for this particular vertical that I think many others will probably recognize as issues that they are tackling or have tackled or expect to tackle in their own industries in the very near future.
Well, you know, I was fascinated by one of the things that you said there when you talked about the competition with Uber and some of these other applications, because where the financial institutions are being judged is on the experience that they deliver. And that was something that was said many times at the Gartner Symposium. They talked about the experience economy, where it's not about the speed of the transaction necessarily or the number of functions necessarily, but about the overall experience that a user or a customer has with your organization. And the primary way that they're going to have that experience is through your app or through your website. So you were down there and they were talking about innovation, which is frankly a word that gets thrown around a lot in our industry. Did you see companies down there that were doing anything truly innovative in the way of experience or user interaction with customers?
Well, I think some of the things that Bank of America is working on are pretty innovative in terms of how they're going to change the, I'm looking for the right word, the overall end-to-end engagement with their consumers. So, for example, they're making use of artificial intelligence. They rolled out a product called Erica. And Erica is similar to other voice-activated assistants, you know, like Siri. But Erica is going to focus primarily on your banking experience. And so what they're talking about is basically having your mobile interaction be very directed at your personal needs. And so you can, you know, tell Erica that you want to, say, transfer money. But then Erica will come back to you and say, I've noticed that you also have a credit card payment due. Would you like to take care of that now? Or, you know, I notice that you're not reaching your savings goals. Do you want to transfer money to your savings account now? But, you know, for some of us that may sound like not fun. But I think what you'll see is that the responses are going to be tailored to your individual needs. So if you don't want that kind of information, you're going to, you know, it's going to learn very quickly that that's not what you're looking for. And so I think the excitement for me comes in how artificial intelligence is going to be applied. And the other interesting product that I heard about coming out from Bank of America Merrill Lynch is this concept of a guided investing platform. It's called Merrill Edge. And, you know, some of you may have seen these things called robo-advisors. They're sort of these online artificial intelligence sources that allow you to help you with your investment choices without ever having to interact with a human being. But organizations like Bank of America and others are doing a lot of work with design consultants and user interface consultants to understand that we don't only want a non-human experience. We want a non-human experience, but then when we want a human, we want them right away. And so this tool and others like it are designed to get you that human advisor when you want it, immediately accessible. But then to kind of leave you alone to do your stuff when you don't want that human there. And so it's that striking of a balance that I think is fascinating. So it's more about, to me, the technology is cool. There's always going to be something innovative and new. But to me, it's that shift in mindset to say, okay, we understand that our users have needs that are going to vary you know, across a continuum and across possibly their lifespan if they stay as a customer that long. And so it's the consciousness of how those needs for different types of interaction have to adapt is that I find fascinating. Whether a thing like Erica will continue to exist on its own or be subsumed into, you know, some of the broader voice application systems that are already out there, like Siri and Amazon's Alexa, will remain to be seen. But I think the fact that they're looking at artificial intelligence, looking at virtual assistants, looking at ways to bridge the human and the online, that's where I think the excitement comes in, and we're going to see some really interesting things between now and probably 2020, 2021, you know, in that time frame.
You know, it's interesting that you mentioned Alexa in the mix there, because I was having a conversation with someone earlier today, and they were talking about using Alexa as a platform for a commercial product. And by that, I mean a product meant for a business market. And I asked why. And they said that it was because Amazon is making the programming interface, the APIs, all of that for Alexa very open, very accessible to people who want to build into that ecosystem. And we started talking about why someone in a business setting would want an Alexa on their desk. And they began to talk about expanding the Alexa interface in ways that let Alexa initiate a conversation so that, for example, if something happens that would cause an alert, if you're not at your desk, if you're not looking at that screen, Alexa could pipe up and say, the following parameter has gone out of spec. You should check on it. Or the following event just happened. You should do something about it. And as you say, it's one of those things where they are using this combination of a voice assistant and a chatbot controlled or triggered by some sort of event monitor to give cues to people, not only in the consumer space, but in the professional space. And I find that fascinating. I think it's going to be very, very interesting to see how people use these voice interfaces in not just a consumer setting, but in a commercial setting. I think there's a lot of interesting stuff to happen there.
I think that's fascinating. And, you know, it's so consistent as well with one of the other topics that that came up at the Innovation Summit, which is the push to automate as much as you possibly can. And this is internally, as well as in a customer-facing environment. But even within the internal IT organization, the goal there is to automate as much of the infrastructure, as much of the transaction through the organization's systems and you know, various applications and databases, have that be as automated as possible so that the focus shifts away from having to have a human minding something to allowing that human to do other types of work that may take more creativity, more intellectual capacity, and be, frankly, a more exciting career choice than, you know, being the person who just makes sure that things keep running the way they're supposed to. So automating the running and care and feeding of our systems is really a fascinating area that I think will continue to lend a lot of new riches for us as we cover technology. You're seeing it in manufacturing as well.
You know, one of the things that I also noted at the Gartner Symposium was that many of these systems that we're talking about depend upon artificial intelligence concepts in order to make them work. But there is some backing away from the term artificial intelligence. People are talking about algorithms being used to do things. People are talking about machine learning. Artificial intelligence is a phrase that is, as the psychologist might say, freighted with meaning. It carries a lot of emotional baggage with it. And so we're seeing people start to back away from the term, although it's becoming part of an awful lot of these systems. And interestingly enough, artificial intelligence as a service is one of those SaaS areas that is growing rapidly, where if a company doesn't want to build their own AI system, everything from IBM's Watson to a whole bunch of other competitors are available to provide that AI component to their application. The applications are getting smarter. And by that, I don't mean they're mimicking human intelligence, but they are becoming more capable in what they're able to do to provide assistance to human beings. And I think a lot of people are very pleased about that, but there are still a lot of folks who get really, really nervous about that as well. Did you hear people actually using the phrase artificial intelligence down there, or was, again, that a phrase that people were kind of afraid to bring front and center in the conversation?
Actually, you know, I think you're tapping into something that's very accurate, but there was no hesitancy to speak about artificial intelligence at this particular event. And in fact, it was identified as one of the goals for Bank of America going forward, was to integrate more artificial intelligence, more machine learning into everything they're doing. And they're making, you know, significant investments in that area. There's no doubt, though, of course, that, you know, AI and particularly things like Alexa and even baby monitors are now in the spotlight as we hear about DDoS attacks that have made use of them, right? So in the same you know, time span that you and I were both traveling to these events, we find out that a DDoS attack was made possible by taking advantage of webcams and baby monitors. So, yeah, there's a challenge and a security concern, I think, that will have to work itself out. And I guess the main thing is that, you know, all of these things sort of fit into the grand rubric of the Internet of Things. But as we've said in other conversations, these things become yet another entry point into the network. And so, you know, particularly for financial services organizations and any organization working in a heavily regulated industry like healthcare, will be pausing in light of the recent news to think about how they can take advantage of the potential here without jeopardizing anything. So I think there's a tension there, but I didn't hear the hesitancy of AI. It's definitely seen as a path toward, you know, future goals.
You know, it's interesting that you mentioned those DDoS attacks. Our sister publication over at Dark Reading covers that sort of thing in great detail. And here at the Swamp Studio for Information Week, I have to admit I downloaded a vulnerability scanner and spent some time yesterday running scans of my network here, and was pleased to find out that I didn't really have any dramatic vulnerabilities that were open. But I think there are a lot of people at this point who are busy trying to figure out how to tell whether they are vulnerable to being the host for a DDoS attack or not. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. I think that protecting your network from the possibility of being used as a weapon is one of those things that goes along with good digital citizenship. And I certainly hope that everyone is doing that for their corporate network. We often spend a lot of time taking care of making sure that things can't get into our network, but we should pay just as much attention to our network to make sure that we haven't had a vulnerability exploited so that we are used as a weapon against other people. It's a complicated time, but boy, howdy, it does keep everyone busy trying to optimize things and protect their content. Well, speaking of content, once again, Susan, it's hard to believe, but we've used up just about all of our time here on this episode of Information Week Live. So I wanted to ask you, you tend to keep your finger on the pulse of everything that's going on at Information Week. What should people be on the lookout for in the coming days over at Information Week? What should people be ready to put into their reading or listening or viewing cues for the coming day?
Well, we've got some interesting stuff coming in the week ahead. We're going to be doing more exploration of DevOps, of course, and Kurt, that's your bailiwick. But we're seeing wonderful response from our audience to everything that you're writing about DevOps. And so we'll be posting more there, and I think that's emerging as a hot topic for many of our readers as they think about how to transform their IT organizations going forward. We're also going to be seeing some additional case studies. As I mentioned, CSAA is one that's in the pipeline. I'll be working on some additional outtakes from our Information Week 2016 salary survey, where we're going to be looking at different non-technical roles that IT professionals have played and talk a little bit about what that means in terms of the varied skill sets that are required to be in IT today. And then a little bit later this month, we're going to be dispatching Charlie Babcock to the Amazon Web Summit in Las Vegas. And so we'll be looking forward to some user stories coming from him about how organizations are putting the Amazon cloud tools to good use.
obviously a lot of great stuff coming up, and we will be on the lookout for all that. Susan, I have to ask, we ask this of everyone, is there a social media handle where people should follow you to keep up with all of this?
Yep. You can find me mostly on Twitter at Susan Nunziata. It's pretty easy as long as you know how to spell my last name. So I will put it into the chat, but it's N-U-N-Z-I-A-T-A. And I have the most fun on Twitter, so that's where you'll see me acting, speaking out and sharing things the most.
And folks, let me tell you, if you're not following Susan on Twitter, you're denying yourself a great treat. She does have an active Twitter presence, well worth adding to your Twitter following list. Now, as for me, as Susan said, I've got some interesting stuff coming up in the world of DevOps and agile development. I'm going to be looking at some more programming languages. I'm going to be looking at a lot of collaboration tools, have a number of collaboration tools that are coming out, being revised, doing some interesting things with over the coming weeks. I'm going to be talking about a number of those. And we have some new podcasts coming up. We've got a series here at Information Week called Information Week's Expert Voice. Happens once a week, and we bring IT executives to you talking about major issues. The next one is going to be something of a primer on hyperconverged architectures. So if you've been wondering what a hyperconverged infrastructure is, this is going to be a great one. That should be up in the next couple of days. And then I have a bunch more people drawn from the ranks of former Interop speakers and leaders. Those may well become an entirely new series of podcasts, working on that, but lots of audio content. And I do want to remind everyone that those podcasts are available not only here at Information Week, but on iTunes and Google Play. Information Week Live will very soon be available on both of those as well. Well, we really appreciate you taking the time to be with us today. We could not and would not do this without you. So for Susan Nunziata and everyone here at Information Week, I'm Kurt Franklin saying thanks so much for being with us. See you next week.